Hey everyone, what's up? It's another installment of Cinematics. These are the interviews for this week for Dusk for a Hitman. Eric interviewed Raymond St. Jean. Eric Holmes, what can you tell us about? We already reviewed Dusk for a Hitman. How was your interview with this filmmaker? What can they expect?
I think it went pretty good for the most part. Started off with a question about, usually I ask this about people doing documentaries, but I'm always curious on when people do biopics, like how, what are you responsible for as far as like telling the truth? Especially since Dust for, and we didn't talk about this in the review, but Dust for a Hitman, it opens with, this is based on a true story, but there are things made up. It just doesn't say based on a true story. So I'd like, I just opened the interview with that because I thought it was really interesting that they opened the movie with that. And I even brought up Holy Spider, which does the exact opposite. It creates characters that are instrumental in changing the outcome of something that actually happened. And it's not until the very end, during the credits, it's like, by the way, this is based on a true story. And it's like, I probably should have led off with that. But we talk a bit about that. And yeah, it's good stuff.
Okay, that's your interview with Raymond St. Jean. Secondly, you have here for this mini episode, you have an interview with Blood for Dust actor Scoot McNairy. Again, he was a star of Halt and Catch Fire, that series. What did you talk to Scoot about other than the movie?
A lot of acting stuff. I kind of asked some of the different, and I think I've asked this with other actors before, but just kind of like, when you look at a good performance, what are you seeing that I'm not, you know, that kind of thing. But he was just a really cool guy. I would party with that guy. We didn't get the party during the interview, but I get the sense that we'd probably run in similar circles if we lived next to each other. He just seems like a really cool guy. And
very cool.
He's a good actor, too. And he's in a bunch of bangers. So, yeah, good for him. I hope he has continued success.
Okay, so that is it. This is going to be the episode. We're going to have an interview, Eric's interview with Dust for a Hitman filmmaker Raymond St. Jean first. Secondly, we'll have his interview with Scoot McNairy from Blood for Dust second, and both of these movies are, Dust for Hitman at least, is going to be, I believe, on digital April 19th, and then Blood for Dust with Scoot McNairy, it's going to be available in theaters as well as digital and on demand April 19th as well for both those days. You're going to listen to these interviews first. If you do not want to listen to these interviews, there's timestamps on the podcast information, and if you want to get down, this is a warning, Eric and Bruce are going to do a recommend of Civil War. They're going to talk spoilers. So if you want to end, if you've already seen Civil War, you're good to go. But whenever you hear Bruce and Eric talk about Civil War, spoiler alert. I will also mention that on the timestamps. They're going to talk about that. Maybe Eric will do a very 30-second rating on Monkey Man beforehand. But that's it for this show. All right. See you next time here on Cinematics.
And it's Raymond St. Jean?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. I'm here with Raymond St. Jean, the director and co-writer of Dust for a Hitman. The first thing that struck me about this movie, because this is essentially a biopic based on a real person, but you had opening titles that I really respected that it was there. Because a lot of times you'll see at the beginning of movies like this, it says based on a true story. And I think the audience a lot of the time says, oh, this is based on a true story. Everything is fact. At least what I got from it was, it's based on real stuff, but this is also a movie. So keep that in mind. What was kind of the idea or process of having the movie even open like that?
Oh, that's an interesting question. First, well, I'm Afghan with a simpler title, you know, but there was a legal reason at the time. You know, there's still a family alive. And so we wanted to make it clear that we took liberties with the story, you know, as much as possible. And I think even if you only write this movie is inspired by a true story, you always take a lot of liberties. So I think what you see at the end, there were legal reasons, but I think I'm happy with it at the end, you know, because I think the audience always often thinks that what they see is real and they take it as granted, you know. And in most biopics, when you do a little research, you see that, you know, the screenwriters and the directors often take a lot of liberties with the story, for good reasons, because you're making a movie and it's a fiction. You know, we have to difference between documentaries, of course, and fiction. And when you do a fiction from inspired by true events, you must do these things. But if you don't say it, people will think, won't think. You know, will see it as real. So maybe this should always be, you know, maybe there should always be a very serious card at the beginning, you know, a very serious statement that says that, yeah, you took liberties with the story.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. We watched that movie and it was one of my favorite movies of the year, but the Holy Spider, they like completely created a character, and that character is instrumental in, not to give it away here, but they're instrumental in affecting the story. And then when you have based on a true story at the beginning, it's like, oh, well, this is how it happened. It's like, oh, no, it wasn't at all. But yeah, like, what's kind of the responsibility of a filmmaker? Like in a documentary, obviously you want to be as true as possible, but when making a feature length, you know, you have carte blanche, I guess.
Yeah, well, yes, we have. And of course, no one from, you know, he wasn't involved in the process, and we did this on our own. So they weren't there to judge the screenplay or give their opinion. Or it's not from a book that was written about him also. You know, we worked from archives, newspaper archives, interviews at the time, and some books. That said, we still are true to the line of events. You know, all the things that happened in the movie were modified, but happened. Like the character is asked to kill. In real life, it was an in-law, but we just choose to make him a different character, so it's more engaging, involving, and a difficult decision for Donald. But something similar happened in real life, and that event just made things happen afterwards. You know, he was on the list, he was on the hit list of his boss after that, after having taken this decision. So and his family, you know, the real Donald had many kids, but we decided to make up a child for different reasons, you know, to protect the family, but also to just to serve our purpose, you know. So.
And also, you co-wrote this with, if I'm getting the name correctly, Martin Gerard.
Yeah.
I know what writing by myself is like. It's very easy. I just sit there and just start typing away. What's a co-writing process like? At least with you and Martin.
Yeah, well, Martin and I, we started working. We wrote another script since, and I'll be shooting it this summer. And each time we go the same way. First, we talk a lot. You know, we spend a couple of months. You know, maybe 3 months, just meeting twice, three times a week, talking an hour, just doing ping pong with ideas. You know, of course we had some source material, we knew the story of the Nile, but still we worked a lot just by talking, and after a while we tried to write the beats of the story, you know, the usual technique you use in screenwriting. And from there Martin takes the big part, the big writing job. You know, he goes away, he writes a scene, two scenes, three scenes, then we talk about it. I may rewrite some dialogues, and again we go back and forth with the scenes. And but the main effort of writing is, maybe I guess, is like you, it's pretty easy for him, and writing for me is very difficult. You know, I'm not a screenwriter, so I guess, I think the main part, the main effort is made by the physical and mental effort of writing is made by Martin. But we spend so much time working together, and we spring ideas from one another so often that at the end we don't even know who wrote what or where does it come from and who got this idea. And it's teamwork.
And when you go to, you got the screenplay done, and I'm guessing it's pretty polished at that point since you two are going back and forth. Like, is there any sort of rewriting that happens on the day, like when you're shooting it? Like, We probably need a line here. We didn't think of that. Or is there anything like that? Or is it just pretty locked in once he starts shooting?
Depends, I would say. With Dusk, since Donald Lavoie, Eric Bruno was so involved in the film, you know, he's in every scene of the film. We had a long prep time with him. You know, I took almost a year with him. You know, we met regularly, and we discussed every line. So, you know, it doesn't mean we change anything, but little things here and there, and you know, he has to. So. And then on the set, we didn't change much. You know, we write so much. You know, here the movies are state funded, so we have all this process of juries and you may go through, I don't know, 3-4 juries before getting the financing of a film. So each time, you know, you meet these committees and they give you notes and you do whatever you want with them, but it doesn't happen from one day to another. You know, it's a long process and with many people involved. So when you start shooting, you usually your screenplay is pretty much, you know, it's tuned. You don't have to do much with it on the set.
I'm not very familiar with the state funded art because I live in America and we don't care about that apparently. But what's that process like with you? Because that just sounds interesting as hell.
Well, it's a bit complicated, you know. There are a few institutions that finance. You know, the federal government gives some money, and provincial government gives some money. And but you work with a producer, you work with a distributor, you develop the project, and you go in front of juries, and there's an analysis that's done, and you go away, you don't have the money, you come back. It's a long process. It's complicated. It's like getting grants from any organization. You know, you have to build a dossier, build a project, make it solid. When it's solid, you may have it financed, but money is limited, and there are many production wants money. So each year, you know, there may be 80 projects that want that try to be financed, and only 10, 12, 15 get money. So it's a harsh process, but I guess it's at the end it's the same. I guess in the US, even if it's private, many people want to make films but don't get their movie financed anyway. So it's a different process. But the key thing is that we have such a small audience, you know. Let's take Quebec. We're 10 million, approximately 10 million people, population. So you cannot have a living cinematic industry in with such a small population. So the idea at first was to, we're a small population, but we still can tell our stories. We want to tell our stories. You know, how do we do that? And it's impossible on a strictly private financial funding system. You know, if a movie costs $6-7 million to make, if it does $1.5 million in the box office, that's good. So no company would be able to survive in such a system. You know, so that's a choice our society made at one point. You know, okay, we'll finance the cultural industries so they can live simply because of the lack of audience, you know.
Is there any sort of like censorship or like we'll make these type of movies but not these type of movies that involves that, or is it just kind of like they just look at the project as a whole, like you seem like you know what you're doing, yeah, we'll go ahead and fund that?
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, it's not only the screenplay, but there's a producer, there's a budget, there's a company with a past, you know, who made other films before. You know, it's not anybody who can come in,
okay,
and present and try to finance a film. So as far as you, well, I would say some people would say, yeah, since my film wasn't financed, you know, they don't want to do that type of film. But from my perspective, from, you know, when I watch the movies that were financed since 2020, it's very diversified, you know. And you have gangster movies, you have comedies, you have any type of, so they try to aim at a variety of film, of genre, and also directors, they help, uh, they, there were some programs helping women directors to start working, and this has produced many good directors. You know, we have in Quebec now at least, you know, 10, 15 very good young women directing movies that are shining on the world scene. You know, Sophie Dupuis, and I can name a few. So you have, I think it's the no, well, no. Everyone is not happy with it, and there are still always places for improvement. But overall, I think the system works pretty well.
Yeah, well, that sounds great to me. I guess the last question, we have a What's in the Box segment. We have a box with a bunch of movies in it, and we pull one out each week to watch it for the following week. We like to have people put movies in the box, and these are movies that are either personal to you or a movie that's like, that movie's really good and no one talks about it. What's a movie you would like to put in the box?
These questions are so tough. Well, the only one that comes to mind is Michael Mann's Thief. You know, I think it's
oh, that's a good one.
It's in line with our movies, and it's a movie I love so much. You know, it's one of my top 10 movies of all time. You know, the craft from everyone on this film is so amazing. You know, it's a great film. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Dust for a Hitman will be available in theaters on demand and digital on April 19th. And Raymond, thanks for joining me and congratulations, because yeah, this is a really good Hitman movie and a lot more considered than I thought it would be. And I'm glad to talk to you and congratulations.
Thank you. Hope my English was good enough for you.
It's better than my French, I guess. So thank you much. I'm here with Scoot McNairy, actor who plays Cliff in Blood for Dust. Different actors have varying degrees of success. Looking at your IMDb and all the movies you've been in, it seems that you've had more success than not. What's the secret sauce in choosing roles that you play?
I wish, man, if you have the secret sauce, please let me know. I feel like I've been really, really fortunate and really lucky to be able to have the opportunity to work on some of the projects that I wanted to work on, and also to work with certain filmmakers that I was been able to work with. But as far as a secret sauce and success, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you ever really, that's the thing about this business, is you can feel successful one day and then the next day you just don't. So, you know, I think that's what kind of keeps you going. It's a little bit like a gambling junkie. You know, you have a little bit of, or you're in a project that gets a lot of attention and then you're really looking for another one. But I feel like what I've been really good at is just sort of chasing stories that I really like and not having a big struggle for what role I am in that story, more of like just really being wanting to be a part of the script or the story. That said, I've been really lucky and fortunate to work on some really great projects and work with filmmakers that I really wanted to work with.
I guess we could use Blood for Dust as an example of that. Like, we can't tell whether it's a success or not because it's not out yet, but there's something about this that brought you to the movie. And we both seen it, so we both know it's good. So, like, what was the thing that attracted you to this in the first place?
This one in particular was the script, but also Rod, the filmmaker. I had met him probably 5 years prior to making the film, and you know, he had made this documentary, Amanda Knox, that I just, you know, I love documentaries, and I watched this documentary and I was really taken aback by it and thought it was really effective and just really well executed and well done, that I had reached back out to him to say, you know, what else do you have that you're working on? And he sent me Blood for Dust. I really liked the script. And then it, you know, we started pushing forward to get it made. And, you know, it takes a long time to get a film like this made. And I think it took us about, I say us, it was more so the producers and Rob really, you know, just chomping it to get it made. And it took us about 3 to 4 years until, you know, we'd really put together the financing and the cast. And so This one was just one I wanted to stick with. I really liked Rod. I really liked him as a person and thought he was a really great filmmaker. And, you know, and I said, not even just this one. I was like, let's, you know, you find people that you really like how they work and their stories and their storytelling ability. And you just want to keep working with them. So, you know, I hope that me and Rod are able to do more projects in the future.
I also want to point out Ethan Suplee's character in this movie, because I'm used to seeing him in Mallrats and the comic relief in American History X. I can't believe I just said that sentence, but his character is intimidating as hell in this. Like,
well, that, and talk about a successful actor. I mean, that guy has been working constantly, yeah, great projects for 30 years or so. He was great in this, and really, it was something that was a little bit different than some of the roles that he's played. I've known him for quite a long time. He's an incredibly charismatic, really lovely guy to be around. So I was just, again, really happy that he came on board to do the project. I mean, he was a big get for this role and on this project. So I was really happy to see him and really happy that he came on.
I also like to ask this with actors, because I'm not an actor. It's just nothing I'm good at or aspire to. Like, I'll watch a movie or a TV show or something. It's like, oh yeah, they're pretty good in that. But you're an actor. You've been doing this for a while. So like, when you see a good performance, what's like a detail you see in someone's performance that someone like me might miss?
I just want to, that's a great question, Eric. And it's got to be different for everyone. So I'm speaking just for myself. I think it's just if I believe them, that's it. You know, they don't have to be like great, or they can be not great. Or if they're believable and I believe them and it doesn't take me out of the story, then, you know, there's some performances, yes, that, you know, really suck you in and bring you in and move you. But some performances or characters aren't written to do that. You know what I mean? And so that believability in a character that you believe them is something what I think makes someone a really good actor, you know, even if there isn't something that they're trying to evoke out of their audience. If they're just believable and they help to continue to push the story forward. On this particular project, I think we were really lucky because we didn't have actors that were just believable. We had actors that were really talented. And so I think that that's, you know, what elevates a certain project.
Yeah, saying they're believable kind of, it makes me think of the common criticism, like, oh, Al Pacino's just playing himself in this one. It's like, you think that? It's just because he's being so natural, it seems that way.
Sure, and it's not easy to, you're also, it's you're exposing yourself, you're being vulnerable at showing who Al Pacino is. I don't, character acting or an actor playing something similar, I don't hold them as two separate things. I think of them as the exact same thing. They are both, take a lot of talent and a lot of, you know, courage and a lot of ability to do both of those things.
Have you worked on anything, or would you like to work on anything, or you just get to go like completely over the top? Like, trying to think of a good, maybe like Robert De Niro thin to Cape Fear, like just something where you can just really let loose like that.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Yeah, I mean, I'm always looking for something that challenges me. I mean, there's also roles too, like Jim Carrey and Dumb and Dumber. Like, I would never even like attempt something like that. You know, you just, there's some project things out there that, you know, that there's other actors that are just better for the part, for the story.
So you've acted, produced, is there any other kind of behind the scenes stuff that you would like to get into? I saw somewhere that you wanted to be a cinematographer originally.
Yeah, I've always had a love for cinematography and photographs, and I did move out to California to be a cinematographer. I think all aspects of this business are fascinating to me, down to the special effects, to the editing. I mean, I'm just recently about to purchase a bunch of sound equipment, which is something, you know, I do like to learn all the different jobs or aspects of the set, you know, down to the grip, to the gaffer, to the, I mean, everything. It's a well-oiled machine, and it's really interesting to see what each individual on set does for their particular job, and not try and just make the job about me. And you know what I mean? It's making a film is a group effort. You can't do it by yourself.
Is there any particular jobs that you just look at when you're doing movies and you're like, Definitely not that. Definitely don't want to be doing that.
I know jobs that I definitely want to be doing. Like sometimes the stunt guys, I'm always like, oh, man, that seems like a fun job. Cinematography. I'm trying to think of jobs I don't want to do. No, I mean, I held coffee. I was a background actor. I mean, I did editing. I did some cinema. I mean, I've done some lighting. I've stuck my toe in like almost every single aspect of this, of the production side of filmmaking. And no, I mean, down to getting coffee. I just loved being on set, and I loved being around creative people that were problem solving to get a film made. I don't know. There's just something about that that's, you know, mesmerizing to me, or just intoxicating.
We have a What's in the Box segment. And in this box, we have a bunch of movies that we have people put in, and we'll take one out each week and watch that movie for the following week. But we have people put movies in these boxes, and these are movies that are like either deeply personal to you, or a movie that's like, that movie's really good and no one talks about it. I wish more people would see that. What's a movie you would like to put in the box?
Oh, here's a documentary. I don't even know if, yeah, I think it's on YouTube. Hale County, Good Morning, Good Evening.
You said Hale County.
Yeah, Hale County. Good morning. Good evening.
Oh, Hale County this morning, this evening.
This evening.
Yes.
This was a documentary, and it's visual, and it's a lot of audio. You hear it. It's almost like a podcast. But the subject matter and how they dance around it, and the images that you're seeing, and the world that this filmmaker created from this documentary, I don't know how many people have seen it, but it, to me, it was incredibly impactful. And just really, really well done about these families down in the South and what their life looks like and what they go through. And it was just awesome. It was like a fly on the wall. It was exactly what it was like. It's like being a fly on the wall in these places and listening to these conversations, and all the conversations culminate to a message that I thought was really powerful.
All right. Well, I've never even heard of that. So great pick.
it's on my mind. Cause I've been talking about it for like a year, you know, since I saw it, I keep referring back to it. So when you asked me that question, it was the first thing that popped into my head.
All right. Well, yeah, I can't wait to check that one out. Scoot, thanks for joining me. Blood for Dust is the film will be released in theaters and available digitally on April 19th. Go see it in theaters. And yeah, it was a really good movie. Really great crime thriller. And I loved watching you in it. So thanks for joining me.
Awesome, Eric. Thanks so much for taking the time, man. It was really nice speaking with you.
Eric, before we do Civil War, unspoilery, Monkey Man, very quick rating on Monkey Man, Dev Patel. Should people see it in theaters?
Yes. Someone said Dev Patel does John Wick really close. I think it's a really good action movie, or revenge movie, I guess would be more appropriate. But yeah, Dev Patel, I mean, this is his feature film debut, I believe.
Feature directing debut, yeah.
It's a damn good action movie. Look forward to seeing more from him. I don't know that I can add anything that hasn't already been said about it.
I hope there's a Monkey Man 2. That's all I know. I hope.
I don't know that I want to see a Monkey Man 2, but I definitely want to see kind of like when Jordan Peele came out with Get Out. It's like, whoa, that's what you got in the that's what you got in the tank. Yes, more of that, please. So yeah, let Dev Patel direct more stuff. I'm here for it.
Okay, very cool. What is your rating on Monkey Man, Eric?
I'll give this a 4.5.
4.5 stars.
Bruce, yeah, Bertrand. Action was every bit as good as anything you would see in a Scott Atkins movie.
Okay, so next up is Civil War. Again, here is a warning. This is going to be a spoiler discussion between Eric Holmes and Bruce Berkey. Bruce Berkey, I thought you saw this. Did you see it with one of your sons, Civil War? Just go ahead and review spoilers with Eric. I'm going to be out of here in 3, 2, 1. Boom.
Yeah, I saw this with my oldest son on Saturday, and we haven't talked about, I don't think we reviewed this at all, but it's directed by Alex Garland, obviously famously from Annihilation and Men, and written a bunch of things as well, Dread and a bunch of stuff, Sunshine, I think, if I remember correctly. And this is obviously supposedly the kind of the his version of a new American Civil War in the not so I guess, not so far away from us future. I guess it doesn't really give us a date on when this is supposed to take place. And you're already well in it at this point. Stars Kirsten Dunst as kind of the seasoned photojournalist, war photographer. Her, I guess, journalist friend, played by, I don't know how to say his name, Wagner Mora?
Yeah, Wagner Mora. Do you remember Wagner Mora?
From I never watched that show.
No, did you watch something else?
I don't know, maybe.
Recently, within a month ago?
Sure, Bruce probably.
Bruce Berkey.
What was he in?
Come on. It's one of your all-time favorite movies, Bruce Berkey. I can't believe I'm submarining the Civil War review.
You got to remember, I don't remember names of actors.
I know.
Yes, Eric, go for it.
The Gray Man.
Eric. Eric. He was the star of a movie that both you and Bruce loved. Our last Patreon episode, you guys were singing the praises of a movie called Elite Squad.
He was in Elite Squad. That was him.
That's the guy. I'm sorry, Bruce. Go ahead, Bruce.
I thought you were talking about a recent one.
Yeah, you guys loved that movie so much. All right, Bruce, go ahead.
And you got a young, up and coming, I guess, wannabe war journalist played by Kaylee Spaney. Named Jesse is her character. You have Nick Offerman in here as the president, who's kind of, I guess, become a dictator of sorts. And Stephen McKinley Henderson and other famous people in this movie. So what is the basic concept of this? Essentially, it is the United States has been divided into a couple factions. One faction is supposedly called the Western Forces. That's Texas and California territories have combined and are trying to take down the dictator version of America. And that's about all they tell us. And essentially we're following these photojournalists as they travel from, where do they start out? Philadelphia, New York? I forget. New York, I think. And they're working their way down to Washington, D.C., try to get there before it falls, because they know that the Western forces will probably kill the president, and they want to have a chance to quickly interview and photograph the president before that happens. So it's more a road movie in the war setting than it is a war movie. And that's the basic setup of it. I'll just give you my real quick reaction to it and then get Eric's reaction to it. Then we can get into some of the spoilers. I would say I started out a little disappointed with this movie when I saw it, although it's technically pretty, pretty darn well made and full of a lot of tension and a lot of interesting moments. Most of those kind of movies, when that happens, they kind of go up a little bit with time. But after a week, I'd say this continues to go down for me in my estimation of it. I think I'm more and more disappointed as time goes on.
Eric, what's your take?
Yeah, it was decent, I guess. First half is not much going on. Second half, pretty much once what's his name? A guy from Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, Bryan Cranston, Aaron Sanford,
Jesus, I can't remember the name.
Okay.
My brain sucks.
Nick Offerman, I don't know, was he in Breaking Bad?
Mr. Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesse Plemons.
Jesus.
Jesse Plemons.
Couldn't remember Alex Cox, can't remember Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
Jeez, what's wrong with me? Once Jesse Plemons shows up, thought it got pretty good kind of war movie, I guess, political thriller, if you want to call it that. I think one of the things they were trying was, since we're following journalists, maybe the movie's trying to stay as neutral as the journalists should, so you can maybe figure out your own, like, here's what's happening, come to your own conclusions, that sort of thing. The problem with that is that since the movie has no point of view, there's nothing in the movie to have a point of view about. It's just bullets flying on both sides. A bunch of like that siege towards the end was, we're in spoilers, right? We can talk about things.
Spoiler review. Go for it. Yeah.
Okay. Siege on the White House. Like that whole battle scene bit with Jesse Plemons is like thrilling to watch. There's nothing to have an opinion on, because the movie doesn't really tell you, it doesn't give you any context for anything. I think part of being a journalist is to say, and if this is indeed what the point is, like, we're going to go at this in a neutral position. This is also a farce. You know, it's fiction. So you need to give us something, some backstory as to what's going on. You need to, if you're going to have the journalists there, it would be interesting if they saw different sides doing different things. And they kind of do, but it's in a strange context that you don't really get much to latch onto, really.
Yep.
This is like, so Don't Look Up, as much as I love that movie, got hit on for being too obvious. I think this is way too vague. It has no teeth. It's not saying anything really. And if it is, it went right over my head because I didn't pick up on any of it. I just think, but based on looking at it just an action movie, the last half is really good. Loved it a lot. I love Nick Offerman as the slimy president, even though he's only in it for a bit. Love Jesse Plemons, even though he's in it for a very short period of time, but that scene is tense as hell. But like as an overall movie, or at least the movie that I think most people were expecting to see, it's not much there.
Eric, what's your rating on Civil War?
Oh, geez. I'm probably going to have to go Cinema Paradiso. 2.5. Except I really like the second half of this. The first half was kind of... Yeah. And Dufour Hall was in it, so that was cool too.
Bruce, what's your rating?
First of all, I would just say, I want to really quickly jump in and say, there is no reason this is set in America. That's one thing that threw me away. Like, to piggyback on Eric there, if you're going to make a movie about the American Civil War, you got to tell us what happened in this America. It doesn't have to be the America we are in now, but you have to tell us what the two sides are about. So at least you know who you are rooting for or why things are happening. Like he said, with the journalists, we don't even know what the journalists are expecting to see from the different sides. If they're expecting to see one side be just and one side be terrible, or what they're expecting to see. So we have no context. So I agree totally. I think 2.5 is the score for this, because even though it's an okay action movie, for Garland to make this movie about an American Civil War is absolutely toothless.
Toothless. Wow. Bruce, what very quickly spoilers you wanted to hit on as far as this movie, as far as talking Civil War?
I mean, really, spoiler wise, I don't think there's much to spoil other than, okay, there's this whole thing about they telegraph the fate of the Kirsten Dunst character. So I think we're supposed to think like, oh my gosh, you know, this young bright-eyed young girl is becoming hardened to the point that she'll photograph the death of her mentor by the end of the movie. Right. But it's done in such a corny way that...
I actually kind of liked how that played. I've heard similar complaints about that, but that scene kind of worked for me.
I mean, in the most basic way, but you knew that's what was coming. You knew that. I mean, they made it very obvious, and thematically, it didn't make sense to me, because once again, I didn't know what we were supposed to think that the photojournalists were really doing.
So,
you know what I mean? Like,
from a thematic standpoint, I saw that as the idea that we're supposed to be there to observe and report, right? You know, we're like mall security, but, you know, in a war zone, and we're taking pictures. At the beginning of the movie, she's like, I was so freaked out, I didn't even take a picture. At the end, now she's her mentor, her friend, you know, family or whatever. And she's so hardened at this point, and she's able to take the pictures as she's dying. So that's kind of her character arc, or her growth into...
That's Kirsten Dunst's character arc? Whose character?
Kaylee Spaney's.
So yeah, Kaylee Spaney dies at the end?
No, she photographs Kirsten Dunst dying.
Kirsten Dunst gets shot in front of her, and she's taking pictures of her as she's getting shot. And then Kirsten Dunst falls dead next to her, and she's still taking pictures. Oh, and great. She's just doing it because at this point she's been so... numb to everything that's going on, that now she's a photojournalist. She can just kind of look, her filter is the camera at that point.
See, okay. To me, that's such a minor arc to have happen. Like
but I mean, that's kind of all this movie has.
See, and this is perfect. I'm going to give you a perfect example. And I mentioned this in one of the threads. Here would have been more interesting, right? So they end up being embedded with the Western forces. Western forces are going in there. Now, first of all, I was like, are the Western forces supposed to be the quote good guys? If they are, then you would expect that they would not want to be filmed doing atrocities. But they essentially are proudly doing atrocities in front of the photojournalists. So the only other interesting arc I could have seen, if they would have done a better job of explaining where both sides are coming from, is the disillusionment of the photojournalists. But by the end, they discover like, oh my gosh, we're not objectively filming things. We're just a tool of propaganda. Like if they would have figured out at the end that they were just,
that would have been sweet.
because it would have made total sense, because essentially the final shot is them doing a trophy shot for the Western forces as they've killed. Am I wrong? That's exactly what they show us.
I thought that part was pretty funny.
Yeah. So the fact that they're doing that, that should have been a moment. That should have been the moment where, like, oh crap, I thought I was this great objective revealer of the truth, and all I am is this tool of propaganda.
Actually, that part was a great bookend, because it opens up with Nick Offerman as the president. It's like basically kind of going over a speech and practicing, like, you know, this real platitudinal kind of we are America, we will you know, rise above, you know, that sort of thing. My best Nick Offerman I can do. But and then at the end, what was it like? Oh, like, I just need a quote from you. Don't kill me.
Yeah.
And then they're just so, like, they shoot him, and then they're like posing next to him like they just caught a giant fish, or like killed a buck or something.
But you know what I mean? I think you agree with me on this part. It was so empty. It was like, we didn't know what he stood for, really. We didn't know what the other side stood for. We didn't know what anyone stood for. So it's like, okay, it was just a war movie then. Just an action movie. Honestly, this movie made no difference compared to Independence Day. It's just...
the pure spectacle. I like this more than Independence Day, though. Well, but yeah,
I do too. But I mean, they're both basically, there's blowing up national monuments to make it an effect, but it has nothing to do with the story, really.
I think I gave this 2.5 stars. If it was called anything else, and I went in with the expectations that this was just going to be like we're going to follow around some journalists and it's going to be a war movie, I think I would have liked this more. I think the expectations going in hurt this. So even though I gave it a 2.5, I probably still watch it again. I probably like it more. Like kind of like when you watch a movie and you have like high expectations, like, oh, that sucked. But then you go back like years later and it's like, that actually wasn't too bad. Why'd I hate it so much? Oh, yeah, because I was going in thinking it was going to be up here and it was kind of right here.
And to your point, and then we can stop talking about it, but I mean, to your point, if it had decided to be about something else, like not America, Civil War, and they were just about photojournalists like in the Civil War somewhere, how much you want to bet they wouldn't have been scared to make it really clear what the different sides were. So you would understand what the photojournalists are in. they literally avoided that on purpose. And it was like, you're avoiding the whole like context of the story.
And it's very difficult. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the fact that their main characters are journalists and we're not doing any journaling is kind of a strange choice.
Yeah, Bruce, they're just literally photographing things. That's it.
Bruce, and you are a huge Garland fan from his work. And do you just felt he lost his compass, lost his way along making this movie
lost his nerve. I think he was afraid of how politicized this would be, which is like, well, then don't make this movie. It's like, if you're going to make a movie about the American Civil War, that is politicized at the outset. You either go for it, pick a side and let this one side hate you, or don't pick a side, or whatever. You got to give it something. But if you're not going to make, was that?
What did your son think?
He thought it was okay. I mean, he didn't go head over heels over it, but I think he was just thinking of it more as an action movie. I started thinking I might be at 4.5 stars on it, but like I said, the more I thought about it, I'm like, this is not doing the job it's supposed to do. So,
you know, the biggest sin of this movie, they didn't get Axl Rose to show up at the end and go, what's so civil about war anyway? Roll credits.
Yes.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time here on Cinematics. Tell us what you think of Civil War and Monkey Man. All right. Anything to say, Eric, Bruce?
Yeah, Monkey Man's good. Civil War, like, it's better than my 2.5, but like, you got to go in with no expectations whatsoever to get any real enjoyment out of it.
Okay, Bruce.
That's all I have to say too.
That's all I have to say. Okay, so we are done.